We are talking MSU basketball with Sam Martin. We're talking depth chart. We're talking Pierre Brooks transferring out of the program. We're talking McDonald's All-American game. We're talking Max Christie hypotheticals. We got it all for you on today's episode of Locked on Spartans. Let's get
You are Locked on Spartans, your daily podcast on the Michigan State Spartans, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day.
Spartan friends, Spartan family, Locked on Spartans listeners, thank you so much for kicking off your day with us here at Locked on Spartans, your team in green and white, 5 days a week. That's right. Any news that breaks, which hey, we're going to get to in a hot second, you know where to find it. Locked on Spartans, please rate, review, subscribe, and please welcome on friend of the program, Sam Martin. You guys know his voice. This guy is a number cruncher, a ball knower, but above anything else, just an all-around great person. Sam, how on earth are you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, Matt. It's always great to be here talking hoop at the highest level. Excited to talk about some off-season stuff. Tough end to the season for our boys, but we're ready to get back on the horse next year and give it a go.
Yeah, why not? Within a week of MSU bowing out of the NCAA tournament, we're already ready to flip the page to next season. But as we alluded to a little bit ago, on Wednesday, it was either late morning, early afternoon. I don't know. I don't have any concept of time anymore. Regardless, Pierre Brooks, in the least surprising news probably to hit East Lansing in quite some time, he's transferring out of the program. I just want to add some context here. And I really don't want to pile on this kid, but this is a story of maybe why things aren't working out here. 4 of 23 shooting since the new year began. That is, of course, January 1st, 2023. That is 17% shooting from three. He has made no three-pointers since February 4th versus Rutgers. 7 games since then. And, of course, did not play in any tournament games. The writing was written on the wall in bold impact font that maybe it's not going to work out here. But any thoughts on the Pierre Brooks exodus here for you, Sam?
Yeah, I think this, as you mentioned, not at all a surprise. I do think Brooks was a guy who was good enough to play at Michigan State and good enough to have a role on the team. And I'm not trying to be old man shakes fist at cloud. I think that with no judgment whatsoever, this represents, I think, something that's different from, say, the 1999 to 2001 era of Michigan State, where you had a player like David Thomas, who has been an assistant coach for the program in more recent years, took a redshirt in the middle of his career and ended up staying for the full 5 years and becoming a major contributor at the end. When the role is not there, players do tend to look elsewhere, and that's much easier. There's less resistance to transfer. There's benefits and costs of that for the player and the program. But right. I think Brooks had the tools to be a hybrid forward from Michigan State who could really offer good shooting. He didn't do enough defensively to stay on the floor, and the shot just didn't go down for him. So it ended up being a disappointing season for him. I'm not surprised he's looking elsewhere. There seemed to be, obviously he kind of spent a lot of time in the doghouse, and players in Izzo's doghouse tend to go either to being his greatest friends and lifelong program legends, or they kind of head for the door. And it's, I'm sad to see him go, but I wish him the best. And I think that there is a very good college basketball player in there who can be a contributor for a different type of program.
I wish nothing but, the best for him. I think you do as well. I don't want to speak for you, but I think a lot of us State fans want to see Pierre Brooks do well. I mean, it's not, ill will. It's not for, he had a horrible attitude, or he was just rotten. Like it just didn't, really necessarily work out. He did have a good opportunity to really grow a little bit with Malik Hall's injury earlier in the season, and even throughout that, we saw in the PK 85. We saw it kind of around that timeline that we're taking one too many lapses on defense for you to be on the court in a Tom Izzo system. And from that point on, ideally a nice 3-and-D player. The D isn't there, and then by the time February rolled around, The three is gone too. So what are we left with? Hopefully it is
just an ampersand at that point, which is
kind of it. And that's not necessarily what we're looking for here in East Lansing. So yeah, hopefully a change of scenery, a refreshed outlook will help Pierre Brooks in his next step, wherever that is. Maybe it's in Kalamazoo with Dwayne Stevens. Who's to say? I'm just throwing spaghetti at a wall right now and seeing if anything sticks, but yeah. Hope nothing but the best for him moving forward. I don't have really much else to add. Again, like this is just shocking.
No, I would only say with respect to Pierre that he's similar to a lot of other players, and that when you go up a level, whether it's high school to college, college to the NBA, and you're not the very best, you're going to have to change the way you play. He was a high usage on ball scorer in high school, and his role, he never was going to have the juice to be that type of guy at Michigan State. He was going to have to play off the ball, hit shots, and then be a contributor on defense. And as you mentioned, the defense was never there. The 3-point shooting kind of dried up on him. And then, when you're left with only the ampersand, you're not going to play a lot of minutes for Tom Izzo.
No, understandable. So as we flip the page here, look, we're going to get to a big breakdown of what the depth chart is going to look like starting in the next segment. But before that, hey, on Tuesday night, that's right, the Mickey D's All-American game took place. Jeremy Fears, the highly rated 4-star or 5-star point guard, depending on what site you look at. He was in the game playing for the West team, and Xavier Booker, the 5-star top 10 recruit out of Indiana, Xavier Booker. He played for the East squad. The East squad won 109-106. Actually, a very entertaining game. It wasn't complete lackadaisical like you would get from an NBA game where guys already have a name for themselves. Like, no, these are young kids trying to make a name for themselves still on the national level. Neither Fears nor Booker were on the court during that late East team push late in the game, but still, you saw some things from both guys. And look, I don't want to do a whole breakdown just dissecting their games just from the McDonald's All-American game, because while it was competitive, it's still maybe not a game that suits Xavier Booker's game. Like, I don't see a lot of pick and roll action going on in this game, not so much pick and pop action. But Jeremy Fears, you know, it kind of worked out for him. So whether it was something that you saw in the McDonald's All-American game, we could start there, or if you just want to flip the page on that and just start talking about these guys in general, any thoughts?
Yeah, so we weren't able to, and here in Canada, there was no live broadcast, so I was able to catch some highlights. And what I saw, though, reinforced something about Fears, that he's a guy who you would want to play with. One of the few people in that game who was looking to pass, who was looking to set people up and actually getting in something called a defensive stance. Not that there was a ton of defense played, but he actually would bend his knees and hips and try to get around screens and things like that. So it did nothing to change my mind on him. I think he's a winner. I think, in formal parlance, he has that canine within him. He's the guy I expect to make the biggest impact in year one at Michigan State. Booker, I'm pretty much going to give him a pass on the McDonald's All-American game, unless you can hit a step back three or maybe do like a post isolation. As a big man, you're just not going to do anything in those type of games. But I think that his ranking and what he is as a player are not quite simpatico. I think the expectations are a little high for Booker is what I would say. I think when you look at his profile, he's a long-armed stretch big. He's ranked in the top 10, big riser. Hey, we got another Jaren Jackson Jr. on our hands. Settle down. He is not that type of player. He's a good prospect, and he's got great tools. He's got a very nice jump shot. He's got some ball skills. He can do some things. The defense is just not there right now. Like, he disappears on the defensive end of the floor. He's not impacting a lot of shots at the rim. He doesn't play with his back to the basket on offense. He's not a very physical player. I think he's got a long way to go to earn a big spot in the rotation. There are going to be minutes there for him. We'll get into the rotation next season. Yep. And the four spot is a place where, obviously, with the departure of Hauser, MSU is going to be looking for minutes, but there's also going to be a lot of competition at that spot. So I would just say with Booker, to MSU fans, to just calm your expectations down. He's a very nice prospect, and I think he'll be a great player in time, but I'm not looking at him to make an immediate big impact in the way that I am with Fears, because he brings, while he doesn't have the best jump shot right now, his passing, his leadership, and his defense are things that are really ready to make an impact right now. When you look at highlights of him, both in high school and even with like the USA, Team USA basketball stuff, he is a real impact defender. Like he can even protect the rim off the ball as a guard. Really sort of like a, you know, AJ Hogard, Tyson Walker type, another guy who can really be a point of attack difference maker on that end. So I'm expecting Fears to make a lot more of an early impact than Booker at this point.
And we'll get to all that later here, actually just in about a minute. But yeah, that was so well said about Xavier Booker, because I've been trying to think of a way to like say it eloquently, because it's tough. Like, obviously, you know, he's a top 10 recruit, and that means that, hey, the world should be expected of this kid. But I think it's ranking based on his ceiling. But I don't know how to say all that without flatly saying that, like, oh, he's overrated. Because I don't think he is overrated. Like, he is going to be a great player one day. I just hope that MSU can squeeze all the juice out of that orange before he leaves here, whether that's a year, whether that's 2 years, like however long that is. But yeah, I mean, it is a ceiling ranking for Xavier Booker. So
there's a difference between a prospect and a player. And I would just say the player is not where the prospect is right now.
Yeah. But I, you know what? We're going to see how much we think he's going to be playing next season here in a hot segment. First, need to talk your ears off about FanDuel Sportsbook. That's right, America's number one sportsbook in the number one time of the year to get in on the sports betting action. And what better place to do it than the number one app in America? And hey, if you're a new customer going into the Final Four weekend, well, this gets even sweeter for you, because FanDuel is giving new customers a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's right, up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. If your first bet doesn't win, just go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. Sign up today. Claim your no-sweat first bet. You can wager on everything from the money line to point spreads, which team will be cutting down the net. They got player props. You could tie them all together in a same-game parlay to make your payout even sweeter. It's all in an app that's safe, secure, super easy to use, and you get paid quickly with FanDuel. You're not waiting around for days at a time waiting for your winnings to hit your account, not with FanDuel. So do not miss your shot at the no sweat first bet up to $1,000 when you join FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/lockdown to sign up. Make every moment more with FanDuel. And let's get the one, the only Sam Martin back on the program here. And also, let's introduce a listener question, lockedonspartans@gmail.com. And this is from Sync Jewel, who just very, very simple question. Very, very important question, though. Point blank, what's the depth chart for 2023-24? Simple as that. What are we looking like here? Take us to church, Sam. If you just want to start banging out names and rosters, and yeah, go for it, man.
Yeah, of course, you know, the biggest questions with respect to that depth chart are, you know, are we going to have Tyson Walker, or are we going to have Malik Hall as part of it? So I'm going to work with the assumption that they both come back. I don't have any information that is what I would describe as good information either way on that. I've heard some nonsense on Twitter that really I wouldn't put much stock into. So assuming that Walker comes back, I think that the starting lineup, and assuming that Hall were to come back, the starting lineup would be Hogard, Walker, Akins, Hall, and probably Sissoko at this point. Madi, as much as his performances were up and down, even within the tournament, we really saw the full Madi experience with his brilliant performance against Marquette and then his disappointing showing against Kansas State. But as I've said before, he's still a prospect, even going into his senior year, because he just hasn't played that much basketball. He's still getting better. Do I think that he's going to turn into prime Amari Stoudemire? No, but maybe he can catch a few more alley-oops. You know, maybe his hands don't improve, but his awareness and especially on offense, there were a lot of dunks there to be had against Kansas State where he just wasn't attacking the space. But Sissoko, Cooper, Kohler, those guys are going to play most of the minutes at center. Maybe Xavier Booker plays some center. That remains to be seen. I think all of certainly those 1 through 4 guys would be looking at about 25 minutes a game. Usually you don't see players, unless they're in the Winston or Tillman tier, go much above that for Izzo because of the way that they want to play, getting out in transition a lot. I think, you know, my guess, and time will tell. College basketball, you never know how much players are going to improve from year 1 to year 2. But I'm expecting Fears to absorb most of the backup point guard minutes this coming season, and Holloman to be more of a marginal role player. Again, yeah. Like if
I agree.
You know, yeah. If this were the old days, he might be like looking at like a David Thomas mid-career redshirt. You just don't see that anymore. So that's right. Probably not going to happen. But I think certainly those guys will be competing for that spot. I don't think you're going to see each of them play 7 minutes a game. I think one guy, certainly by the, you know, crunch time of the season, will take control of that role. They'll probably compete and both play early in the season, and we'll see who comes out on top. I think you're going to see mostly Jaden Akins playing the three this season. Yep. With three guard lineups. He rebounds well enough. He defends well enough. If you actually look at the on-court data from last year, the two players who had a major impact on MSU's points per possession allowed were Sissoko and Akins. Those are the two guys who made the biggest difference in the defense overall. There's some shooting luck baked into that. College basketball is not a huge sample anyway, but I think that his ability to defend, his ability to rebound, and then his burgeoning offensive skill set are going to give him a chance to really take the next step. And then as for, I think that really you're going to see Walker, Hogard, and probably Fears, maybe Holloman as well, play most of the guard minutes between those three guys. Hogard and Fears playing together, we'll probably see it. I question if there's enough shooting, although, hey, Hogard's right, improved in that area. So he's been more willing to take spot ups. At the three, I think that's where you're going to see, without Brooks, you know, with him out of the equation, the two freshmen, Cone Carr and Garrett Normand, we'll see which one of those guys steps forward. Just based on tape, you might expect Carr to be a little bit ahead on defense to start, and defense tends to be how you earn minutes.
Sure.
His ability to get out in transition also will be something that Izzo really likes. But again, this team's without Hauser is going to be a little light on shooting, so that's an area where Normand can help. We'll have to watch how that unfolds. At the four, I think you've got Malik Hall, Xavier Booker. That's most of the minutes, maybe a little bit of Cone Carr playing that spot as well. I don't really know how Izzo's going to see him. He reminds me a lot of Brandon Dawson as a body type, as a player type, where he played the three early in his career, finished his career as a four. So that you might see him play more of the three next season. But we'll see. They do need some minutes at the four, and he can give them something a little different there as an explosive athlete. And the center minutes, as we mentioned, I think it's the same crew as this season, another year of development. We'll just have to see on that. You know, all of those guys, even Sissoko, as late into his career as he is, are kind of mystery boxes for me, in that we don't know how much they're going to develop between this season and next. You know, is Kohler going to be able to hold up more on defense to where his post-up game is able to shine through? Is Cooper going to become Drew Namek 2.0? You know, is Sissoko going to be able to offer a little bit more of those areas we talked about earlier? So, you know, that's kind of how I see the rotation breaking down. The key battles being Fears versus Holloman for the backup guard spots, Cohen Carr versus Garrett Normand versus a little bit of Xavier Booker for that backup 3-4 minutes. And then who's gonna improve out of the centers.
Yep.
What I like about that is you have a lot of competition for playing time. If those two guys come back that we mentioned earlier, what you don't like is that other than the three guards who are starters, if Walker comes back and Hogard, Walker and Akins, there's not a lot of consistent guaranteed performance that you can count on. Even Malik Hall going into his fifth year is still a little bit of an enigma who doesn't play super consistent. Sometimes he looks brilliant. Sometimes he disappears. So that's how I see it. I see it as a team with a lot of upside, with championship upside, but there's a lot of questions as well, a lot more depth than this past season. So I think an exciting group.
There we go. And just amongst all those position battles too, you mentioned, I mean, all the great ones, who's going to win that backup point guard role, the three between just Cohen Carr and Garrett Normand, and also the center position too, whether it's the backup center behind Sissoko, or even if you just want to make it a three-horse race between Sissoko, Carson Cooper, and Jackson Kohler, which one of those position group battles is just most fascinating to you going into the offseason here?
Yeah, well, it's
good options. There's good, or the four, really, between Hall and Booker too. I mean, that could also be thrown in the mix as well.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't expect Booker to be pushing to start right away, as we kind of talked about earlier. Right. But you know, I'm a Michigan State basketball fan, and I'm a Tom Izzo, you know, religious zealot. And so, of course, I'm most interested in the point guard position. You know,
yep, there we
who's
go.
Who's going to take those minutes? That's yep. always where it starts with this team, whoever the lead ball handler is, whether that's a true point guard like Winston or whether it's Draymond Green, Denzel Valentine, kind of hybrid forward type. It's always going to be who's that lead playmaker, who's going to be able to kind of set up teammates, run the pick and roll. Who's going to be able to handle pressure. That's something that at times you saw this Michigan State team struggle with this season. It's been a theme throughout the Izzo era is of when you pressure that first action of the offense, we saw Marquette hedging out on the ball screen.
Yep.
Finally, late in the game, they went away from that, went into more isolation and just let Hogard just bully his way to the hoop. And that really allowed them to break away and win that game. Fears might be a guy who can be a little more pressure resistant, a little more vertical as a point guard, a little more attacking the rim. So that could offer some solutions there. I think it's a really exciting group with a lot of ball handling. And, you know, Jaden Akins was a point guard in high school. I don't think he has a college point guard skill set, but as a three, he's a very good ball handler, you know, who can do some good stuff attacking off the dribble. So it's a team with a lot of dribbling and passing and ball handling and decision-making in it, which is very important the way Izzo wants to play. So it's an exciting group, but one that, as is always the case with college basketball, there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah. Even with guys, you know, that are McDonald's All-Americans, of course. There's another question here from Sync Jewel. And hey, we did a lot of looking into next season. Let's just rewind the clock back to last season to introduce this hypothetical. Again, lockedonspartans@gmail.com if you have any questions. Sync Jewel writes in, how would this team have been different had Max Christie returned? I could be really petty and immature about this. I could say that, well, I don't know if they were missing three turnovers a game and 21% shooting from three in conference play like last season, but I'm working on growth, Sam. So I'm not going to have that as my answer. I'm going to be a mature adult about this. And also, let you answer this question first. How would this have been different had Max Christie returned?
Yeah. You know, Max Christie in the NBA this year, I'm just looking up the totals here, 18 for 43 from two, 26 for 62 from three in 38 games. So, you know, he actually carved out a little bit of a role on the Lakers. So kudos to him. You know, his three-point shooting underperformed last year a lot at Michigan State. I think we were all disappointed with his overall offensive efficiency and output. So you would have expected him to take a step forward. However, would he have been better than Jaden Akins was as a two-way player?
Right.
Yeah. I kind of don't. I think that Max Christie was in the Josh Langford category for me of Izzo gaslighting the public about a player's defensive ability, where Izzo just like he said Josh Langford's whole career, he's a great defender. He's our best defender. And it's like, we watch the games, dude. Like, Matt McQuaid is on the team. Like, he's not the best defender. And the same with Max Christie. Of like, oh, he's a real swing stopper. Like, he wasn't a great defensive player. I think Akins was a big improvement on him. Akins was a very accurate catch-and-shoot player, so could fit better into a role. And, you know, would he, as a second-year player, have settled more into a role of taking catch and shoots, coming off screens, attacking the rim, or would he have felt even more emboldened to explore the studio space in the mid range like we saw as a freshman? So I don't know. I think that Christie was a guy who like his basketball game is kind of like my golf game. If you edit together my best 10 shots from around, you'd think I was a scratch golfer. If you look at the scorecard, it tells a different story. If you look at Max Christie's highlights, you'd be like, this guy's amazing. He's brilliant. When you look at the numbers, he was one of the worst offensive guards like we've seen in recent memory at Michigan State. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not sure that he would have helped a lot. And I think that giving those minutes to Malik Hall and Jaden Akins wasn't a big downgrade. So I don't think that's what was missing from this year's team.
Yeah, I also like that, you know, the growth of Jaden Akins wasn't stunted for another year, you know, eating into those minutes. And yes, like Jaden Akins still would have played, but I just don't think as much you know, had Max Christie have been on this team, especially getting that late boom, like what, the last 3-4 weeks into the season that we saw from Jaden Akins, where we really saw his game getting refined. So I just don't think that happens with Max Christie necessarily. So, hey, look, I kid, but I'm rooting for him. Go get him. If you're good in the NBA, that means we could do another, hey, that's a Spartan dog out there, but
I try to be objective.
Kind of underwhelming. Yeah.
I'm definitely a homer, but sometimes my homer takes really hit. So like I said, yeah. and this is somewhere on Facebook, you can dig it out of the annals, and some Michigan State fan group chat said, AJ Hogard's a better player than Jalen Terry. And I said, I'd rather have Jaden Akins than Amani Bates. So
yep.
My hating on overrated recruits has a good track record.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, oh, this podcast was a church for I would rather have 3 years of Akins than 1 year of Monty Bates. And I've had some takes that have aged just horrendously on this podcast. Like, that makes me question why I'm even doing this. But I have some like that one. It's like, that's right. All right, we're going to put that one in the win column there. So, hey, look at us go, Sam. Look at us just being homers, but also correct homers sometimes. Look at us go. I do have one more question deep in the mailbag here. This is from Joe. This really doesn't have to do with anything MSU specific, but instead college basketball. Joe says, potential college basketball rule changes you would like to see. The one that I got in front of me is fine coaches $25,000 every time they don't follow up three with less than 5 seconds to go in a game. That's one. And then, of course, I got another. I actually have a serious one. It's just the tried and true. Go to 6 fouls per player, but actually, maybe let's introduce this. Instead of 7 fouls for a single bonus in a given half, maybe make it 8 fouls to get to the bonus, and then instead of 10 to get to the double bonus, make it 12 fouls to get to the double bonus, because I feel like there's way too many games where it's like, oh my God, there's 8:18 left in the second half, and they're already in the double bonus. How is this possible? So I would just keep pushing the bonus back. So that's what I'm passionate about. Do you have anything that you, as the future NCAA commissioner, would like to instate in the game here, install in the game, I should say?
It's a great question. And it kind of like similar to like American case law, you know, do you want to change the rule or do you want to change the interpretation? If I have to change like a written law, I think what I would say is that, no zone defense. That would be my number one thing by far.
I hate
zone defense. Yeah. And specifically the same NBA illegal defense rules. No 2-3 zone. Jim Boeheim's out of here. Let's destroy his legacy and get it over with. Yep. I hate the 2-3 zone. It's un-American. It produces ugly basketball. It's just not a good thing. So that would be my rule change.
Okay.
If I'm allowed to change an interpretation, sort of change the points of emphasis, I would say referees should be instructed to call 60% of the number of fouls that they currently call overall. Okay. Just dramatically reduce the number of fouls called. You could increase the fouls to required for disqualification from 5 to 6. But my fear with that is that would simply produce an inflation in the number of fouls called. And the same with the bonus. I don't know that would be the effect. Maybe it would have no effect at all on the number of fouls,
right.
But my feeling is that it might produce foul inflation, as much as college basketball refs love to call fouls. That's the biggest problem with the game, is too many whistles, too many stoppages, not enough free-flowing play. What's great is when we get into a game like Kansas State, Michigan State, where the action is flowing. They're allowing some contact. They're allowing some physical play. The sport is what shines through, and not, well, we're enforcing the rules. So I think reducing the number of fouls called and then changing sort of the block charge percentages to like 90% block, 10% charge, like rather than the 50-50 it is right now. Those would be my two if I could change the interpretation of current rules.
I don't hate either of that. Yeah, anything I can do to get back to like the mid-2000s Big Ten basketball where the score would be like 59-56, but only 4 fouls were called the entire day. Like, that would be delightful. I miss those days, man, where it was just UFC with an orange ball and 2 rims. Like, I do miss those days a little bit.
Antonio Smith was a first-team All-Big Ten player, and he, you know, could not hit a shot outside of 4 feet. Right. So there was it was a different time, in many ways a better time.
when men were men in this country, Sam, it was great to be a Big Ten basketball fan.
Evan Ashmeyer was there for 10 of those years somehow.
Yeah. Oh, man, you tune into Bo Ryan versus Tom Izzo, and there is just blood everywhere on the court when the Badgers and the Spartans got together to meet up. Mm-hmm. Oh, I miss those days. I think we're maybe in the minority with that. I don't think people want to go that far back to the Stone Age of physicality and lack of foul calls, but I do miss it. I do miss it a little bit. So,
you know, there's still like, I mean, the NBA game, I think, is more free flowing than college, and in many ways, like,
yeah,
a better sport to watch. I realize I'm going to get killed for saying that on a college basketball podcast, but there's a way to preserve the elegance and spacing of modern basketball, but just allow the sport to happen more.
Sure.
And I think that fewer foul calls is just better. Like, it's just anybody who plays pickup basketball, not to compare my like Sunday YMCA game to the Big Ten conference ball, but like, you know, nobody likes the guy who calls a foul on every possession.
No.
And that's what Big Ten refs do. And it's, I think people who, you know, every this in March, you get all the NBA people coming in and finally watching college basketball. And every year they go, oh my God, what is this game? And
right. It's
because of that, the way it's officiated. And it's not, I'm not trying to say like conspiracy theory, they're against my team. No, it's like, it's just bad.
Yeah.
It's just the way
right. It's
done doesn't work for anybody.
I would agree. There we go. Sam, hey, thanks a ton for all your time once again, all your knowledge, all your insight. Anything you want to plug or anything you just want to scream about before we let you go and enjoy the rest of your day here?
Always appreciate you having me on the pod, Matt. You can follow me on Twitter at MoveBetterSam. You can check out the Move Better Project on YouTube to see the other side of me when I'm not analyzing college basketball with Matt. I like to help people learn how to move better, learn how to work on solving your own pain and aches from home. And if you're in the lovely town of Kingston, Ontario, you can find me for all your physiotherapy needs.
There we go. Look at that, man. Well, hey, always love talking with you, Sam. And gang, thank you so much for giving us a watch or a listen. Subscribe, rate, review, do whatever makes you happy. Go enjoy the rest of your day. We will be back tomorrow. Love you all. Go Green.